Well, hold your breath, folks, because this is going to be a really enjoyable Zav Chat. Welcome back. I'm here with our principal, Bill Doherty. Morning, Bill.
Morning, Shane. Morning, Wilbur.
Morning, Mr. Doherty.
Now, Wilbur, you've got the very big task of introducing our two guests who you know better than Bill and I. So welcome them. And our theme today, folks, is social justice. And we're really going to explore it. The two guests are really interesting folks. But I don't want to forget to say our producer, Michael Trappert, at the Xavier Inn concert, his guitar performance with Sebastian Achetta was 11 out of 10, and I forgot to say it last week.
Well,
sorry,
Trappy.
But you
well
were
Trappy.
Just superb.
Just, it was a... That's pretty...
It was a great night.
But we'll take it away.
Thanks, Hills. Yeah, we're lucky enough to have two great mates on the podcast today that are real social justice advocates through their whole life. We've got Paulie Stewart, who is a famous member of the Painters and Dockers. For all the music listeners out there, you might know him. And James Haynes, who's an old Zav, finished in 1987. These boys have been focusing on social justice their whole life through a various amount of programs. Paulie has worked very closely with Jesuit Social Services, and worked building up an Artful Dodgers music campaign that disadvantaged Melburnians could go and produce their own music. Now we're looking into different things and building up programs, which we're really looking to get some support and shine a light on through this podcast. A bit on how you guys know each other and how I've connected with you is through the immersion in East Timor. Both Paulie and James have a big connection to the Timorese community and have worked closely with the a group of nuns over there called the Alma Nuns. So why don't, Paulie, you shine a light on what the Alma Nuns do and who they are over probably an hour from Darwin.
And a big welcome to Zav Chat, Paulie.
Thanks thanks for having us, boys, to come along here. And I love coming to Xavier. I'm a De La Salle boy just down the hill. I went to school, but... yeah, I worked at the Artful Dodgers Studio, run by Jesuit Social Services, which got me introduced to this college. But I think the best part of working for Jesuit Social Services was meeting the character sitting next to me here, James Haynes, who is a former Xavier boy. And I know the motto at the school is, you know, being a man for others. And this guy is an absolute living embodiment of that motto. When I first met James at the Artful Dodgers, he would come in. He's one of Australia's leading lawyers, but he's also a fantastic cook. So every month he would come in and cook for these disadvantaged kids. And I tell you, you couldn't get into the place because it was just so – it would be their best meal for a month without any doubt. And it wasn't just like burnt sausages and bad sausage rolls. It was like really top-notch food, and – the kids would take it all home with them and stuff like that. And it was after meeting James and, telling him a bit about my own life, I told him about these little group of nuns I was working with in East Timor. And I was I met them, got a big connection with Timor. My brother was one of the journalists killed up at Balibo in 1975. And that's not long after I met these little nuns, and they... I think there were five nuns, 30 disabled kids and one motor scooter. That's all they sort of had.
Wow.
So they were really disadvantaged. And I told James here about it, and he sort of got an interest and met the nuns and sort of, they're conniving, these little nuns. They get they know how to, you know, pull your strings. Yeah. And, so we've had a really close involvement. James being an incredible guy, I used to raise money, and this is probably a bit sus to say, you know, I'd raise money, but I'd have to send it up to Sister Anastasia's cousin who ran a milk bar in Dilly to get the money sort of to us. So it got there, but it was a bit sort of dodgy, you know. But
it's just the way you made things happen, though, isn't it, Paulie, which is fantastic, and you can just see the drive coming out of both of you. I'd love to just to maybe set the scene a little bit more. We were speaking about the Belwell Five.
Yeah.
And so maybe just take us really quickly. There'd be listeners there that would be unfamiliar with that I actually was myself.
It was a big story at the time and a tragedy.
Absolutely. And I can't believe it's 50 years on October 16th since it happened. But a brother who worked here for Channel 7 in Melbourne with two other guys from Channel 7 and two guys from Channel 9 in Sydney went up to East Timor, which had just got its independence because the Portuguese colonial masters pulled out and they left this little independent country up there. But the Indonesians didn't like that. They, for a start, they're a huge Muslim country and East Timor's really strongly Roman Catholic. So they invaded the place, the Indonesians. They said they weren't, but they actually did. But unfortunately for my brother and his four colleagues, they filmed the Indonesians arriving, but they were captured by the Indonesians and all executed. And I was 15 years old when it happened, and it sort of set me on a lifetime path of trying to get some justice for the East Timorese, because as well as, you know, the five journos dying, like 300,000 Timorese died during that invasion.
It's amazing. That was my year 12 year. So I'm 50 years since I did my English exam in a few weeks' time.
Yeah.
That was such a big story at the time. I was 16 or 17 finishing school. Greg Shackleton is still, sort of in my brain. The name just came straight out. It was a big, big story, even far away here in Australia, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, it's sort of dying a bit now. A lot of the younger generation actually don't remember it anymore. And for me, I've spoken about it. You know, when it happened, I thought, oh, I will talk about this for 2 days and that'll be the end of it. 50 years ago, I talk about it probably most days, which is kind of outrageous, yeah.
Yeah, Paulie, I'm just interested in James's connection here and how he's been invested in the East Timor whole project. So, James, why don't you set the scene for your whole story?
Thanks, Will. My involvement with Timor started from, apart from cooking and all the rest, I've got a passion for scuba diving. So when East Timor opened up in 2002, I started making plans to go over there and do exploratory scuba diving. And I went over there in 03, 04 twice. And then when I met Paulie, we made that connection over a concert at, the Jesuit Social Services, the Artful Dodgers. And then I met the nuns. And since I went there, I'd been amazed at these people who had been so brutalised, as Paulie said. You know, there was a massive genocide in Timor. And I thought I wanted to do something to help. It's so close. It's an hour from Darwin. And then when the nuns came along, it just kind of worked and I thought, let's get behind it. And I saw Paulie's, he's kind of like a ringleader in the circus and it's very easy to get behind him. As he says often at a docker's gig, if you play an instrument, you're in the band. And so it's very easy to get in the band with Paulie and see his vision for things. And we contribute in our own ways. And eventually we got a formal charity set up. And since then we've gone up to visit them and it's been amazing.
Fantastic. I'd love to dive in a little bit more into these little nuns because they seem a remarkable and they do get right under your skin. They've got a way with them of just innocently asking for things but with a wonderful sense of purpose and outcome behind it. So maybe just tell us a little bit more about their work and how you intersect with it, Paul or James.
Yeah.
So we intersect with it through, I think, a number of ways. And the first is noticing the work that they do. And I don't think you can undervalue actually people being recognised and they know that someone in Australia actually cares about what they do because they just get up at 4 a.m. every day and they take these kids and they stay in the same room. A lot of these kids are heavily, heavy needs kids. They're autistic. They've got multiple problems. But the thing they do for these kids is that not one of those kids that struck me when I was there with them last year, not one of those kids thinks they're disabled. Mm. So they're so loved that they actually have no idea that they're disabled. They'll sit there with an arm with two fingers and they'll be feeding you biscuits and they've got no sense of being not normal or not loved.
Wow.
And that's the extraordinary thing they do.
Isn't that a gift? So it's a Dutch-Indonesian order, is that correct?
It's a Dutch-Indonesian order out of Malang, Paulie. You've been there.
Yeah. The headquarters is in Malang, and you know, it was so funny. But, you know, I grew up not really, you know, loving Indonesians, given what had happened to my brother. And I'd been working with the nuns for about 10 years up in Timor and going on drives with them around the countryside. And I can remember we've got a particularly good buddy, Sister Anastasia, who's the cheekiest little nun, who's got me and James right under both of her thumbs. And I can remember saying to her one day, you look a bit different from, you know, the local girl. Where's your village up here? And she said, oh, none of us are Timorese, Paulie, we're all Indonesian. And I went, oh, wow. And I told her my connection and she was, oh, so I'm so sorry. And I said, it's not you, sister, you know, it was your military. But, yeah, look, just an amazing – when I first met them, I'd never met anyone who just lived their life, you know, for others, you know. I worked as a music journalist for a long time at the Herald Sun and I was used to meeting rock stars who – you know, thought they were the bee's knees. But to meet these little nuns who just were so, you know, gave everything they had to these kids that no one else gave a rat's about, I just sort of fell in love with them. It's been a 10-year involvement. But one of the greatest things that happened was, like I said, James is a great cook. So we went up there with this one time. And we arrived and said, well, we're taking over the kitchen for 2 days and we're going to cook for the nuns and the kids up there. And these little nuns went, yeah, you're funny one, why are you here? And we said, no, we've come up here to cook for you. And they go, what, two old white guys are coming to cook for us? And we went, yeah. And, well, actually, I should tell the truth. I was more like on entertainment value. James was in the kitchen cutting up. I was sort of telling jokes and shaking it, you know. But James served up these meals to these kids and these nuns, and they usually when you go there, you can't hear yourself think because it's all these kids talking. Hey, you know, you couldn't hear a pin drop because
wow.
James made them like spaghetti bolognese, which to them was like eating the greatest food of all time, you know, because they don't get a lot of meat in their diet. And it was just so... It was one of the greatest moments of my life. So,
well, yeah. Can I explore with you, and then I want to ask the boys, when you first met them, was the fire already burning in you around the whole idea? I mean, we're finishing off social justice 2 weeks. It's been on fire, the college. There's been some brilliant stuff happening. Take me back to your first vibe of that.
Yeah, so I met James and Paulie on a formation weekend for my immersion in East Timor. And
year 10?
Year 11.
Year 11, okay.
There was 16 of us going to the country and we were all just meeting each other in Melbourne, and Paulie walks in the door and it's just as he always is, just a smile on his face, and it's just one of those things that really hooks you in. And then at first when meeting the Alma nuns, after hearing about what Paulie had done and James's work cooking for them and really uplifting them, we just saw it firsthand. We met a little kid called Aldo who has no arms but manages to eat and write with his feet. As Paulie said, he wouldn't know he's disabled. Like, the Alma nuns take care of them so well. There's sort of a disinterest for that, like, disability. They care for them, but they're not judged or marginalised in any way. It's just an incredible operation. They had the Pope there last year.
Wow.
When I was there in June, July, they were renovating the place and doing as much as they could to prepare for the Pope. And Paulie said on his last visit that they'd almost looked like they were on some sort of substance because they were just over the moon, still reminiscing on that time. So yeah, a deeply Roman Catholic community, a community of service, and an incredible operation, Heals.
And we talk about hearts on fire. And would you say now, as you're getting toward the end of year 12, that's continued to grow for you? Then I'd like to ask both of you to take us back to your first experience of this sort of feeling.
Yeah, it's interesting, Heals. My next question was, how do you balance it? How do you balance a life of service? Paulie has obviously been sort of goaded into living a life of service since he was 15 with the injustice and his brother was subject to, and he's had his own difficulties in managing a life of rock and roll, a life of journalism, and then a life of service. So I'd perhaps pose the question to these guys, how do you come out of school as a fresh-minded Year 12 student and continue living to set hearts on fire and live a life of service?
I do it, as I tell a lot of students when I talk at schools, I do it for completely selfish reasons because all jokes aside, I'm not just saying this today, but I get 10 times back from the nuns what they give to me. Just the love that they sort of give me back is incredible. And, these little nuns, they're great. They're not sort of pious, holier than thou, go away and read the Bible for 3 hours on your own kind of nuns. They're sort of down in the gutters, you know, sleeves rolled up, helping the kids. And, they've taught me, you know, that you don't need lots of money or lots of big houses, you know, just to feel good about life and yourself is sort of where it's at. And, there was a quote I read, I think, from Winston Churchill, which was, you know, you make a living by what you're giving, but you make a life by what you give away. And that has really sort of served me well with these nuns because, like I said, I get at least 10 times back from them what I get.
Yeah. How about you, James? You said you're a leading lawyer in Melbourne, but you still manage to get to Dilly every now and then.
Leading lawyer might be exaggerating.
But yeah, how's your service balance and how do you manage to live a life of law and then a life of service?
Yeah, I don't really see it as a balance. I don't try and balance it out. I think you just fit in things that give you meaning. And this definitely the work that I do with Paulie through the ELMA and through the work we're currently doing with the Salvation Army, with a music program, that they're things that I always make time for because, in fact, when you're looking at meaning, I think you can look internally, but I think what you really need to do is look externally and how you help people, how you interact with people, that really defines who you are and what you do. So I'd say, you know, look externally and act externally and that affects you internally. So you get more back out of everything you put out there. I get messages from the nuns daily on WhatsApp. You know, they're amazing on social media. Everything's WhatsApp. And you'll get you'll be at work and you'll think you've got a problem. And you look at there's a photo of Aldo doing his, you know, sums with his feet. And you kind of think, actually, I'm pretty lucky. I've got a really fortunate life. And with that, I think one of the things Xavier did teach me was with that comes a responsibility to give back. So, you know, I got a lot out of this school and I've got a huge amount from it, and I think that brings a really attendant responsibility to be aware of giving back and giving meaning in other people's lives, which gives you. So yeah, I don't see it as a balance. It's just a part of your life.
And I think just before Paulie jumps in, one more on that theme for me, James. Have you got any memory of year 10, 11, 12 in terms of what Wilbur was saying and that fire burning, or did it happen way beyond leaving and your studies?
Yeah, I think it started at home. So both my parents were heavily dedicated to social justice, and in a very meaningful way. Mum used to cook with me every month at the Artful Dodgers, and so with that. But I think one of the things that I did was when we went out to Kew Cottages, and we actually just spent time with some of the people out there, and you'd be in the garden, you'd chat. And it just said to me there's a world out there beyond the school. The school's a great world. It's a very privileged world. I think just be aware of that privilege and what it gives you a power to help other people, having had that privilege. So
beautifully said.
Yeah. Oh.
And, Paulie, I know you were wanting to jump in there, away you go.
Well, he sort of answered my question because I was going to say, you know, how did going to Xavier, you know, influence your later sort of career decisions and life? And you've just explained it, that it did have a real effect on you. So that's got to be great to hear, doesn't it?
Yeah, Paulie, it is. And I look over at Wilbur, like you can see the impact that East Timor has had on Wilbur, and that was an engagement that he had with not only fellow Xavierians but other JAXA, other Jesuit companion schools. And Wilbur's been really influential, and it's bubbled out in lots of ways of, you know, when you talk of companionship, et cetera. And it is, you know, we mentioned before, you know, we seek to produce men for others, and that's got to be in that nun sense of sleeves rolled up on a margin, very aware, and having a real acute sense of empathy, that connectivity, and you can't have empathy and connectivity unless you've been there and you've got the experience and you've engaged regularly. And again, I listen into our boys and they're influenced by that, and they're influenced because they don't just sit in the bubble of Q, but they walk out to its margins and they're in kitchens and they're in men's shelters and they're at Friday night school and that's where they're getting such a rich life experience. And James, as you're saying, it takes them well to the to the external rather than being absorbed in the internal, which is a bit of a trap in the modern world for young people.
Yeah, we've actually got big plans for Wilbur, so yeah. he's in the family now, so
I'm getting a sense of that. Now, talking of big plans, there's work to be done still in Timor, isn't there? And you've maybe just share a little bit of what you have accomplished, James, and what you're hoping to go on to.
Paulie was as I said, the ringleader, and we've raised through his leadership and his contacts, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Fantastic.
And, the nuns have now got two Land Cruisers so they can drive to actually go and help kids on the margin. They were previously, when Paulie met them, they were walking for 4 hours to go to see one child to do physio. So we've helped them with that. And recently an old Zav, and I know he won't mind me saying this, Chris Garno rang me and said, I want to have a chat to you, and he then handed me $50,000.
Outstanding fellow.
Yeah, so just an amazing guy. I spent an hour of his time chatting and just got behind it, saw the passion and realised that he could do something and did it.
Yeah.
So we're now trying to build a new classroom for the nuns. They've bought some land in Same, which is a kind of incredibly traumatised place, so not only through the Indonesian invasion but then through the through the Timorese Civil War in 2006, it was destroyed again. So we're hoping to build a classroom there. So if any old Zabs are listening and want to loosen their pockets, feel free to make a tax-deductible donation to the Alma Nuns.
Yeah. And what can you see these nuns doing in that classroom?
They'll just replicate what they've done in Dili. They'll take in the kids who are abandoned, who they can't have room for at the moment. They'll teach them. They'll teach external kids. They'll bring them in. Some kids will remain with their families. Others are just completely abandoned, literally just left at the doorstep. So,
and the place just seems to be like oozing in love.
Yes,
like authentic, grounded, real,
no awful. Nonsense. Yep. Love. And James didn't go on to say what his real dream is to get a couple of the kids from there to come out and come to Xavier and maybe, send a couple of kids from here back up there and get a bit of an exchange going because, Xavier's such a... I've brought the nuns to Xavier and when we walked in, they thought it was the Vatican, the big, chapel and stuff like that. They go, Paulie, where are we? And I'm going, that's okay. They're cool. They love us. Don't worry. We'll be fine.
Well, I think you might be speaking to the coordinator of that project over here. What else is on your mind?
Yeah, I was just thinking of the love, Mr. Doherty, and it's a love for life itself. It's not just loving one another. You see that pride and nationalism in that country. And although they've been through such a brutal and bloody sort of history, they'll all stand with their hand on their heart singing the national anthem with such pride. And it's a love for, like, genuine life. I remember going on the margins in a town called Relaco where the Jesuits have a school, and we'd be on a feeding program to give food to a marginalised community that would struggle for basic food. And I distinctly remember two old men with just about no teeth just laughing their absolute heads off at us playing and running around with the kids there that weren't going to school. They were helping their families find food and they just relished every little moment they had, and they didn't need a fancy house, a nice car, a phone. They just had themselves and they had the community they were in, and it speaks so much to a sense of community that is sometimes lost in a community like Melbourne and a big city life. So I think that, one of the main factors that drive these people to love is the community they're in and a love for life itself. I think have you noticed that, James and Paulie? And
yeah, I think Will, the thing that brought to mind for me was when I was first there was not long after, and I tried to learn a few words of the language, and these people who were going past in boats would say diakalai, And that translates, are you good or not? And you always answer Diak. You always say, I'm good, because they've got such a positive outlook. Despite having been through this horrific genocide, they're still good. And they harbour no bitterness towards the Indonesians either. They're just actually realising that the way they can get around this is through love and community. And the nuns are a massive part of that, also, of shining a light on the most disadvantaged sector of, you know, disabled kids in a society that's already at the margin. And they show everybody's worthy of love. So that's what really sticks for me.
We've got one more thing to ask you before we finish, Paulie.
Sure.
Because you've been very humble about your own career. We'll come back and explore that. But right now... Here's Wilbur as we go around the grounds.
Yeah, thanks, Heels. The same as last week, we're continuing on with Social Justice Week at Xavier. We've had a prayer vigil this week running on in the chapel, a walk of compassion, and, yeah, it's all concluding today and yesterday with Social Justice Week. We also had an Are You OK Day assembly yesterday, which was focusing on mental health, and Henry Somerville spoke, our Prefect of Wellbeing. Mr. Pan spoke, one of the leaders in our wellbeing department, and really trying to shine a light on some of the struggles we may face as emerging members of a generation that are continuing to struggle with mental health issues.
Bill's been away in Perth for a couple of days, but I was telling him on the phone how good Henry's talk was. It was quite outstanding.
Yeah, it was. Just a few little things he touched on, the little 5-cent moments that can... help you make a day a little bit better, or the little strategies. Yeah, it was great.
And, of course, we're getting toward the end of the third term, so probably the busyness is beginning to ease a little.
Yeah, the Year 12s are flat out at the moment. We've got an English SAC on Monday, the final one, so that's a big landmark for our journey in VCE, and everyone's concluding their school-based assessments. So, yeah, it's a busy time here.
I was at Burke Hall a couple of days ago, Bill, for the Father's Day Mass. It was quite lovely seeing the boys with their fathers, and Father Chris asked them to do a blessing. Yep. It was just magnificent. And I think the Barker's Road crew are Friday evening with Mass and a barbecue around about the 6:30 mark.
Yeah, Friday evening, Heels, and I think the footy's going to be on in the Great Hall, I think. So, yeah, it'll be a good night.
Geelong and Brisbane. Anything else for around the grounds?
Oh, there's there's Year 10 dancing social on tonight, which is great. And I've got the honour of hosting our prep parents tonight, those coming into prep, and that's, you know, usually the start of it. Quite amazing, 13 years or maybe 14 or 15 years with us if they're in those kindergarten families. So it's great. Perth, not just at Cottesloe, sunning myself, Heels, had the great privilege of visiting one of our other Ignatian schools, John 23rd, a beautiful combination of Loreto and Jesuit charisms. We share an Ignatian tradition, which is brilliant, and a wonderful school community. And it's just so passionate, so proud, doing wonderful things over there. So they're really rich. Opportunity for me.
Yeah, in fact, my son nearly went there when we were living in Perth. He had the interview. Hey, Paul, can we finish with you not being too humble? Because there's a lot of our listeners, whether they're the young kids who wouldn't have a clue about that music history, but even people of the older generation. That was an amazing time for you, and I know James will want to chip in if you are too humble here, but that was an amazing time. Tell us a little bit about your music background.
Well, the Painters and Dockers, well, I haven't got a musical note in my body, to be honest, you know, and a lot of young people always come up to me going, oh, Paulie, I'd love to be in a band, but I can't sing. And I go, listen, it's never stopped me, and I've been in bands for 40 years. The Painters and Dockers were actually supposed to play one night and one night only, and it was to play off a friend's parking fines. And
see, that's a great story.
Yeah, and we called ourselves that because we were in we played at the Painters and Dockers pub, the Union in Port Melbourne, named after, and they were pretty heavy sort of guys. And this night went a bit crazy, and the police arrived, and they were fighting the Dockers, and there was mayhem and chaos, and I was on stage singing this song, and I looked out and I went, I want to do this for the rest of my life. This is how much fun is this? And 40 years later, 1,500 gigs all around the world, we're still playing. And I'll stop doing it when it stops being so much fun. But
what would be your most famous song, do you think?
Nude School was probably one of the songs we're pretty known for. And Google that. There's a bit of a warning on it. It's a bit of an interesting film clip. But we definitely bonded, James and I, through our love of music, because he is a mad music fan as well, and I suppose that's what got him involved with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I'll also just add to Paulie's music career there of and linking it to Timor as one of the founders of the Dilly All-Stars and writing a song, Liberdade, which was smuggled in on 500 tapes to be blared out during the election campaign at the vote for independence in 99. So that was a critical part of East Timor's independence. And also just give Paulie a plug that he was awarded the Order of Timor a few weeks ago at the Kelvin Club by Jose Ramos Horta.
Congratulations, Paul. Yeah,
so, yeah, he doesn't mention those things. He makes light of a lot of things, but in fact he's a pretty serious guy in the background, and he's inspirational to OAM. A lot of people around him. Yeah, and an OAM for yes. services to thing. In fact, he'd be a great speaker for any corporate people out there who need an inspirational speaker to come and talk at their corporate gigs.
Yeah. We'll have this classroom built in no time.
Yeah, exactly right.
This is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just throw a little curveball at Michael Trappert. We might try and find a little bit of your music, Paulie, and let's try and finish off this wonderful Zab Chat hearing the great Paulie Stewart. It's been a great morning, Bill. Wilbur, enjoyed every minute.
Yeah, if you've learned anything from this podcast, I think it's dedicate your life to a life of service in any way, dedicate your life to loving others, and dedicate your life to a community around you. So I think what we've spoke about in Timor today and your journeys of service, a lot can be learned. So.
Great.
Well
stuff.
Said, yeah. Skipper. Well said. Yeah, it's you can yeah. see the privilege we've got here, Paulie and James. Hey, wonderful having you on today. Mate, I appreciate you coming in.
I'm walking in to walk out 10 foot out of this room. I feel the love, guys. Thanks so much.
Fantastic.
It's been great.
Yeah, great morning, and not many more Zab Chats for you, Wilbur, as the year starts to take shape. But we're back again 7 days hence.